Hi, and welcome to installment number 3 of The Art of Relating. I am your host, Zach Schwartz. I'm a psychologist, but we don't do psychotherapy or counseling over the radio, so we're here to learn together, me and you, a set of concepts and skills to improve our quality and efficiency in interacting with almost anyone. So, today, as promised, we're going to talk about what I call transpersonal psychology, which connects directly from what I talked about last week, which is grounding. Most of you, I hope, by now have a grounding ritual and practice it many times a day, if you didn't already. And the last part of grounding is about self-talk. And the last part of self-talk, remember, relax, affirm, unhook, is unhooking. And today, transpersonal psychology adds a whole element of how you might look at and practice unhooking and bringing valuable resources and wisdom to your interactions. So, as I said in installment number 1, there are 3 priorities when you interact: ground, process, and content. Content's what we're trying to solve or get done, the agenda item. Process is just me and you, which is a higher priority, I think, for having a quality day most of the time. And ground comes first, and ground is about your relationship with yourself. Am I centered? Are my feet on the ground? Am I my best possible self to interact at this moment? That's what brought us to today, because this transpersonal psychology talk is really about your relationship with yourself and with the universe that you're living in. But before we get there, I want to address a couple of questions from last week when we talked about grounding and how to do it and why it's important to relating in a better way. One question had to do with, how do you unhook? And that's really what today's about to some degree. How do you unhook? How do you get outside of the drama? Like, one thing I do with people is I say your emotions are a function of what you're paying attention to. And what you're paying attention to, you have some choice about. If I'm talking to my friend Jerry, and I say, Jerry, come to the here and now, he might focus his attention on, 2:30 sitting in a radio studio or sitting in my office. If that's the extent of his time, space, attention, then his feelings start to become a function of that arena, 2:30, my office. So there aren't bills to pay. We're a lot closer to heaven than hell at that point. There's indoor plumbing, there's furniture, there's chairs, nobody's shooting at us. It's a good moment. But if I say come to the here and now, and he says here and now is Lane County 2018, then a whole bunch of other things become important, like his property taxes or his phone bill or how his family's doing or whether he's getting paid this week. So a bunch of issues start to affect his emotions that wouldn't have if he was just in this office at 2:30. Or if I say come to the here and now, and he says, I'm in the galaxy, this millennium, Milky Way. Well, that's also equally real and also equally here and now. But suddenly all those issues that we were worried about a minute ago disappear. And so adjusting my attention, my time, space at a given moment helps me to control how hooked I am into my drama and how I can unhook from it. I said to my daughter the other day, I said, is the Empire State Building big or small? Well, it really depends on where you're looking at it from. If I'm standing at the bottom of it looking up, it looks gigantic. But if I'm standing at the on the moon looking at it, I can't even find it. It's so small. So really making that adjustment is one of the tricks, if you call it a trick, that I can use to more easily make things small, which is part of unhooking from them. The other question that came up this week, relevant to last week's show, was someone asked me, what if you can't get grounded or you can't ground the other person? And sometimes you can't. And it's hard to proceed with a process or getting the content done if we can't get grounded. Things usually won't go well if both people are not grounded. So when I can, take more space. We still have to ground first. You have the right to space. You have the right to delay most conversations until a later time. If there's a deadline, then we only have that time to work in. Things can get tight. But it's hard to focus on process or content if we can't get grounded. So making an adjustment, bringing in a mediator, taking a second time out, I'd have to do what I can to establish that center. And remember the other tricks of grounding someone else. Let them know that you're listening. Let them know that they have choices. More choices means less vulnerability. Less vulnerability means less tension or anger or stress. Make it easy to create an environment that's safe so that they can get grounded. Take more space if you need it. Anyway, I'm ready to return now to transpersonal psychology. Remember that we talked about in an earlier installment the four schools of psychology. If you study history and systems, and there's really no reason why you would unless you were a graduate student or had a special interest in such things, but I did. And the first school was psychoanalytic, Freud, inside your head, the unconscious, etc. The second school was behavioral, forget the inside of your head, it's all about how you act. Psychology is the study of behavior and how to mechanically change that behavior is what matters. The third school was humanism, where the goal in the 60s was self-actualization, getting your ego, getting your self, your manifested self, as healthy and strong and capable as possible. So finding your best goals for those things and achieving them is what they would call in humanistic psychology self-actualization. But then in the 70s and since, they started a fourth school in psychology, maybe 60s, and that school was called transpersonal psychology. And transpersonal goes beyond self-actualization. Where do I interact with my reality, my planet, my universe, other people, so that I'm not just trying to develop a healthy ego, which is good to have, but I'm also assuming my position in relationship to all of reality and learning how to dance with the universe, if you will, to create a more positive future or situation. So books like The Tao of Physics, or I read one really called Beyond the Quantum by Michael Talbot that was hitting that juxtaposition of spirituality, psychology, and physics, which is what the transpersonal is all about. Or readings and writings by people like Ram Dass or books like The Snow Leopard or The Only Dance There Is. It's a place where psychology, like I say, and spirituality meet. And I can figure who I am in this universe besides who I am as a self. So we each have an ego. And my ego is my current manifestation. It's the physical. It's my mind. It's my body. It's my heart. It's my personality. All is my ego. When I do a group training, I'll bring someone up and I'll say, "What's your name?" And they'll say, "I'm George." And I'll say, "Meet George. George is an ego." It's not a bad thing in psychology. An ego is just yourself. It's who you are from birth to death. It's the matter. When I say something manifests, I mean it appears in physical form, energy to matter. Einstein showed us that those things were interchangeable, and they are. And so down to my organs, down to my flesh and bone, I'm still Zach. That's my ego. Zach is my personality and body until I die. If you get down to the littler pieces, like my molecules and my atoms, and when I was a kid, an atom was supposed to be the smallest thing, but turns out not to be true as science evolves and understanding evolves. But down to my atoms, I'm still Zach, and that's still ego. Then you get down to the teeniest tiny particles like quarks, and then you get down as small as you possibly can. And what they discovered about 70 years ago is that as small as you possibly can and still manifest energy to matter is what they call little bits of light or photons or quanta. And as it turns out, everything, me and you and this microphone and the wall itself and the trees outside, everything in the sky above, are all made of light that eventually manifests as quarks and subatomic particles and atoms, etc. So when they discovered this, as I understand it, they started studying what light was about, since everything is made of it. And that study of what light is about today is called quantum physics. Now, quantum physics started studying light, and they discovered three things at least, probably more, but three that to me are directly related to the art of relating and who I am as a grounded being. One of those things is that light, unlike matter, is eternal. Whatever manifests, whatever becomes matter, ceases after a time to be matter. So matter comes and goes. Your ego comes and goes. But the light that you're made of never goes. It's eternal. It's always been here. So the light that you are made of, that I am made of, is not just like, but actually the same light that the dinosaurs were made of 70 million years ago, or that the volcanoes were made of before that, or that the explosion of the Big Bang was made before that. So that light that I'm made of is at least, going back to the Big Bang, approximately 14 billion years old or more. My ego is only in his 60s, but my light is eternal. That was one thing. The second thing they discovered, and this is the trippiest one to me, is that light is aware. So not only am I aware as Zach, that's my ego, say, watching me do this radio show, but I'm also aware as light watching me do this radio show and learning from it. So light is conscious. And a book I read recently called Beyond the Quantum, he said, don't take that on faith. He said, here's the math. You know, math and science are called sometimes the religion of the West. He says, but I can show you the actual calculation that will show you that light is aware, which is pretty amazing, because awareness is not an easy thing to define. But awareness seems not just to be a function of brains, but also a function of energy. The third thing they discovered is that the little quanta, the little bits of light that make all this stuff up, is constantly communicating with each other. And once two quanta are part of one function, like two bits of light in my eyeball, and they do my eye together, if you then separate those two quanta by, say, 10 galaxies, time and space doesn't matter, and you spin one, the other one instantly spins. They are in touch with each other then forever. So those three things, light is eternal, and it's what I'm made of. Light is conscious, look it up, the math, and light is communicating with itself, is all happening within me and outside of me and between me and you all the time. Sometimes I'll start a training or a workshop by asking my audience, who out there believes that they have a soul? I used to think we each have an ego and we each have a soul. But now, I'm thinking we each have an ego, and that way we're separate. But we share one soul. Call it the universe, call it energy, call it light, some call it God, call it whatever. But we share, because the light is constantly in touch and constantly exchanging with other light that it's been involved with in the past. So we really all share one sense, the wisdom I hold inside of 14 billion years of the experience of the light is the same wisdom, not like it, but exactly the same, as you hold inside. When I work with people and I say, you know what, what's your, relax, let go of ego for a minute, feel the light that you are, what's the wisdom from the light? And I call that part of you your Obi-Wan self, credit to Star Wars, but you can call it whatever you will. Some call it their oversoul, some call it the light within, call it whatever, organized religion or not. And when you tap that, you get a feeling and an awareness and a wisdom that is usually right on about how to handle a given situation. However, here's one of the tricks. Free will does not belong to the soul. Free will belongs to the ego. So that light will always guide me correctly in what I should do or say next. But the choice is still my own, Zach's, about whether I listen to that advice or not. And sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. None of us I know of is perfect. Free will, when I'm grounded, I have some of that free will, belongs to the ego. The soul says, this is a good idea, but it's up to you. And the soul has infinite patience. So it says, if you want to take the next 1,000 incarnations to learn this, or you want to learn it right now, entirely up to you. So the ego has to choose. What I like to say is that the universe, the light, will not mess with free will. Ultimately, the light may have the power to evolve or change any or manifest anything it wants to, but it won't mess with free will because that would take away the value of all of creation. It's only our free will that allows us to feel love for each other, to keep each other company, to keep the world interesting. It's an essential piece. I wrote a book a while ago called An Archangel Training Manual, and it's available at dynskills.com on transpersonal psychology. The company's called Dynamic Interaction Skills, and the books and trainings and webinars are available on the website. Also, podcasts of these, if you missed any, will be also available on the website. Anyway, go there and visit. But the Archangel Training Manual was a book I wrote about these things for which we're talking today. I want to take a couple of minutes to share my vision of how this whole creation thing happened and why we're doing what we're doing and why we're trying to evolve and learn these skills. It's only one vision, and God knows everybody can have their own, just as valid, just as meaningful, and just as right on as mine. But I like to share the story as I did in the book, An Archangel Training Manual, and the story goes like this. Imagine we're pre-Big Bang. Imagine there's only one. There's just a bunch of energy sitting in the void, not particularly manifesting as anything. And that's peace, and that's love, and that goes on for I don't know, because we couldn't count time without objects, but how many eons? But sooner or later, and eventually, I imagine that the energy itself, being conscious, gets a little lonely and a little bored. And I think those two feelings are very fundamental to as motivators of creation, loneliness and boredom. So off of those two feelings, the one, the energy, splits into two. In the West, we call that first day of creation, light and dark. In the East, we call that yin and yang, or entering polarization or duality. Because when there's two, they can keep each other company and things get more interesting. But there's a problem. And before too long, two is not enough, and we still sometimes feel lonely, and we're certainly getting bored or maybe even sick of each other, the yin and the yang. So off of that sensation, the two explode in Big Bang terms into two quadrillion pieces over two quadrillion galaxies. And that seems like enough space and enough pieces that we shouldn't any longer be lonely or bored. But alas, now there's a new problem. And the new problem is that unless the pieces act independently of each other, that is to say, have free will, then the whole thing is just a big Barbie and Ken set, and we're going to get lonely and bored again. So it's really important that the pieces, and the pieces like each ego is a piece, each entity is a piece. So each human is a piece, Mother Nature is a piece, the planets are pieces. Each piece has its own free will, means free of the will of the one. So if someone says, I love you to me, I want them to be free to say they're not. I don't want to pay them to say that. I don't want to force them to say that. That's meaningless. Coercion is not free will. So what I want is for the pieces, each of us, to have free will so that we can choose to keep each other company, choose to share love, choose to act with virtue. And so now the pieces have free will, but there's yet another problem. Once they have free will, they start to act at times not very nice to each other. There's fighting, there's jealousy, there's greed, there's fear, there's threat, there's, you know, all of the things that we would call the pains and problems of living on an imperfect earth together. So how do we evolve to treat each other in a heavenly manner, if you would, each piece having free will and the light unable to interfere? It's really quite the problem. Well, so we incarnate, we manifest over and over and over because I would describe the earth as a school for learning those things. I would describe enlightenment as our egos acting in a way that's in total harmony with the light. When our ego and our soul are in perfect agreement, then that person, that ego, this Zach or you, are acting in a way that the soul completely approves of, with patience, with kindness, with love, with humility, with all those qualities that are necessary for us to learn to love each other and share peacefully in eternity of incarnations. That would be the goal. So the earth is a school. We come here with whatever unfinished business we have, which is what I call karma. Do you ever look at a tarot deck? You know, fortune-telling cards, tarot cards. The first card in the deck is called the Fool, as I understand it. And the Fool, no matter what the art or culture it comes from, the Fool is always entering the earth, stepping on the planet, and he's always carrying, he or she, a bag or a suitcase or a knapsack or a stick with a handkerchief around it. And what's in the bag are all those things that he still or she still needs to learn to grow toward enlightenment. Enlightenment being a state where they are kind and they are giving and they are peaceful and they are relaxed and they are emulating what the light would like them to. What they haven't learned about how to do that yet is sewn into their next adventure, their next incarnation, their next life on the earth. That's kind of how I understand what that card means. So we all have karma, which to me is not about justice or reward or punishment. It's really about learning what we still need to learn. Now, some call sleep little death. In other words, you leave the planet, you leave the role you're playing, you leave your ego in a lot of ways behind when you go unconscious to what psychologists think is defrag. Put your loose bits of experience and data into files. That's what we do when we sleep. And when we wake up in the morning, we're re-entering the world. It's like a mini rebirth. Each day is new. And when you wake up in the morning, what it like is the first thing you did was ground. And then after you ground, find the light that you're made of. Find that soul. Find that consciousness. And have both the ego's awareness and the soul's awareness available to you moment to moment all day long. It's what I think Ram Dass referred to as the little eye and the big eye. So having that soul with you all day, practicing in the light of adversity and problems and stress and all the things that life brings, is how we continue our education. And that's a great place to start. So I'll come to a workshop or a training. I'll say, how many of you believe you have a soul? Some of you will say, I'm existential. All I am in touch with as real is what's manifest. You know, our egos, this table, this lecture room, whatever. All this other stuff about souls and what the universe is doing is fatuous to me. That's called a hard existentialist. But a lot of people aren't, and most people in most groups say, I have a soul. And we start to talk about what that means in terms of light and how you can use it to improve and to eventually learn what you need to learn and to develop yourself into a healthier ego and also into a healthier connection with all other things. So next week, I'm going to get back to nuts and bolts, back to the existential, back to the skills and concepts we need to learn to interact effectively, I promise. But for this week, grounding, being aware of three-chip interactions, practicing every day. For those that can, feel that light inside and see how that brightens your day or gives you wisdom or gives you strength or gives you empathy. When I go to do an intervention, that's where I go first, inside. So when I show up for that intervention, I'm already kind and loving and willing to cooperate and caring about the person I'm working with. Your ability to be considerate would be way enhanced by having that soul available when you enter an interaction. So all of this is practice till you get better at it. That's all I'm doing. That's all any of us is doing. It's funny. I went to the universe once just in my imagination and said, yeah, I understand why you have to leave people alone and let them do their free will. But what about hurricanes and tornadoes and natural disasters, tsunamis? Do we have to have that going on? And the universe said to me in this fantasy of this, hey, it's not me. I told you I don't mess with free will. Talk to Mother Nature. Nature's an entity. And she'll stop those things if she wants to, but she probably has her reasons. But don't be afraid to have the conversation. However, I, the light, as you already know, cannot interfere. So good luck, because your goal is to find that great harmony between the two states of being, the ego and the soul. So please write in your questions to Zach@kepw.org, and I will answer what I can in the next show. And visit the website at dyingskills.com, and have a wonderful week playing with this concept that I've done my best to share in this half hour. Lots more to talk about this, but be well.